WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is veteran New York journalist Pete Hamill. Last year, he left New York and moved to Mexico City to become editor of the English-language newspaper, the Mexico City News. 4 months later, he resigned his post and headed back to New York. He got the job after he had written a story for the Washington Journalism Review in which he praised the paper. The outgoing editor of the Mexico City News read the story and approached Hamill about taking over his job. Soon after, Hamill was hired by the publisher. Hamill says the job offered him the chance to live out his fantasy of editing a newspaper, but the dream soon soured. I asked Pete Hamill to compare Mexican and American journalistic practices.
Well, the basic thing was the great blur. You couldn't find out anything. You couldn't find out what the circulation was. I had to bribe somebody, literally, with a couple of thousand pesos in the press room to tell me what the actual press run was. And to this day, I don't know for sure whether it was accurate. If you wanted to find out how much a page of advertising sold for, you couldn't find out because everybody was making separate deals depending on the advertiser. You couldn't say, okay, it's $1,000 a page or $200 a page. You did not know. I could not find that information out. The other part of it, though, was a much more ferocious kind of pressure, which was the notion of what a newspaper is. Most newspapers in Mexico follow the party line of whoever happens to own the newspaper. I didn't want to do that with the paper we had because we were an exception being published in English, and I didn't want to. I thought one of the things we could, the values we would have there would be to be in a strange way a kind of corrective to all the other newspapers. And I think that's what finally got me in trouble with the publisher.
Well, what kinds of things did you try to do that were different from what was usually done that got you into trouble?
Well, there were several things. The specific one that got me into trouble was our coverage of the strike at the university in Mexico City, which is not a small thing. There were 350,000 students out on strike. I did with my tiny, limited staff, I assigned somebody to the administration and somebody to the students and switched them off every other week so they wouldn't end up being too sympathetic with the people they were covering. And the publisher, after 3 weeks, didn't want me to do that anymore. He wanted me to reduce to, in his word, virtually nothing, the coverage of the students, which meant that and the reason was that the paper had, or rather he had, a line on the strike, which was to support the administration. I happened to agree with him. I thought in this particular case the administration was right and the students were wrong, but that didn't matter. That should not affect the news pages of your newspaper. You want to write an editorial or write columns or whatever, you can do that, expressing opinion on the thing, but not to affect the news coverage of the story. And when he ordered me to do what he wanted me to do, which was to only cover the administration line and publish their handouts without any reporting on the other side of the issues, I had no choice except to resign.
You resigned over principle. And I think of all the times that someone really wants to put themselves on the line and say either this changes or I'm going to leave, but they feel that they can't because they need the salary desperately to support their family and they can't move from the city that they're in for family reasons and so on. Do you always feel like in order to take on a job like that, that you have to have the kind of freedom that would enable you to actually say, well, in that case, I'm quitting and then leave?
I think you must somehow or another know that if you eat a bad meal often enough, it's going to poison your system one way or the other. So I think anybody in the newspaper business or in politics or in radio or television who continues to just do something that runs against the basic grain of their craft or their responsibility or their vocation, whatever you want to call this peculiar thing we do, then in the long run you pay for it. In the long run you're less a writer, you're less secure because you can't stand the face you see in the mirror every day. I told my staff, here's the situation, I explained what had happened, please don't do anything impetuous, give it a couple of days, we'll talk about it, I'll try to see whether we can straighten this out, but please don't go off doing anything rhetorical, But 2 days later, when it was absolutely clear that he wanted my resignation, 19 members of the staff resigned, which was the whole city desk, the whole sports desk, the whole copy desk. They were all young people without options that I had. And I must say that I was kind of cheered, because these are those young people who are from the Reagan era, who were supposed to care only about money and not about ethical considerations. And they were putting themselves on the line, risking everything in a strange country with no union, with no support system, no welfare, no unemployment, who just took a walk on a matter of principle. And I must say I was kind of thrilled at that.
I wonder if they've gotten jobs.
A lot of them have, yes. Some have gone to the wire services and stayed in Mexico. One of the guys just started last week here in New York at the Daily News. A couple of are freelancing. Some went back home. But they all continued to function, and I think they can now look back at their time on that newspaper as an honorable undertaking and not something that they did with just to make a payday.
You know, what I want to ask you, I've read a lot of feature stories in my time that made a place or a person seem just wonderful, nearly flawless. And then I've been to the place or met the person and realized that they don't measure up at all to the kind of positive press that they were getting in the feature stories. I wonder how you feel having written a feature about this newspaper, and it seemed really good to you from a distance when you were writing about it, but you found all these problems once you became a part of it.
Well, I think that's one of the lessons that I learned, is that things aren't what they seem to be. I obviously knew that about a lot of other things before, but when I looked at the newspaper, it was under one set of circumstances, and I think if I wrote about the State Department and then ended up in the State Department, I would see a different State Department. There's obviously a vision that other people can communicate to any reporter that emphasizes the positive. You look for the negatives. If you don't find them, then you're at the mercy of what you're being told. You can't make it up or cast aspersions or get paranoid and think everything is a lie. You must, to some extent, as a reporter, trust some of your sources. I mean, what I wrote in my article was in fact true insofar as people said it to me, but there was another reality beyond that.
Is this going to change the way you write feature stories? Or the way you report?
Oh, I don't think so, no. I mean, this is not... I mean, I've felt disappointed by larger things than that.
After you resigned from your editorial position at the Mexican paper, you moved back to New York. Did New York seem different to you after you returned, having been gone for a long time?
Well, yes. I had been gone to Mexico for about 6 months, but before that I was in New Orleans and the South for 3 or 4 months. So I had been gone from New York altogether about 10 months. And in the interim, the Howard Beach thing had happened. And I guess that, combined with a few other things in the city, had, to my sensibility, heightened the racial tension in the city. And I was struck when I got back to New York how few poor people feel in control of their lives to the extent that they'll get up and really work at it somehow to do something about it.
You've always been a bit of a romantic about New York, don't you think?
I am, yeah, sure. I mean, it's a city that my parents came from Ireland as immigrants and made my life possible. New York, my life could only have happened in New York.
I understand you're going to be moving to the country soon.
Well, both.
Both?
I mean, I will be living both there and here. I mean, I'm at an age, I'm 52, where I have accumulations. I've got all those Charlie Parker records and all those books and everything, and no place to put them if I live in New York City.
Does moving to the country have anything to do with returning back to New York and seeing it differently than you did before?
Oh, no. No, it's really just a matter of... how do I have the room in order to live like a human being for the last 20-odd years of my life? I'm not moving to the middle of Nebraska. I'm an hour and 15 minutes from 72nd Street, so although it's called the country, it's really I'm hardly pulling a Thoreau and heading to Walden Pond to contemplate the life of frogs. It'll be something still connected to New York City.
Pete Hamill, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Author and journalist Pete Hamill is a columnist for The Village Voice.